Well, good evening. Good to see everybody. If you have your Old Testaments, turn with us to Numbers chapter 11. I thought it would be a sermon that we need to think about because grumbling or murmuring, your version may say, is talked about, in fact, quite a bit in the Bible. And given the year and the circumstances, it would be very easy for us, I think, to fall into something like this. The Bible warns us about this in the New Testament using the Old Testament example that we're going to read after we read this verse. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 9 and 10, it says, "We must not put Christ to the test, as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble, as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer." So that's how serious it is before God. If we grumble, whatever this is, as we look at what the term means, then we could incur that kind of wrath from God. Now, this was physical death. Sometimes I think people think, nah, God doesn't strike people dead in our day. We don't know that, do we? He did. He has. There's no reason to think he doesn't. And yet, also, the eternal consequences. The fact that if we sin against him, then we lose our soul eternally. So that's how serious this is. It's not something to take lightly, or to think that we could engage in it without consequence. So in Numbers, the 11th chapter, begin reading with me. "And the people complained in the hearing of the Lord about their misfortunes. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some outlying parts of the camp. Then the people cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire died down. So the name of that place was called Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. Now the rabble that was among them had a strong craving, and the people of Israel also wept again and said, 'Oh, that we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt that cost nothing, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our strength is dried up, and there is nothing at all but this manna to look at.' Now the manna was like coriander seed, and its appearance like that of bdellium. The people went about and gathered it and ground it in handmills or beat it in mortars and boiled it in pots and made cakes of it. And the taste of it was like the taste of cakes baked with oil. And when the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell with it. Moses heard the people weeping through their clans, everyone at the door of his tent. And the anger of the Lord blazed hotly, and Moses was displeased. And Moses said to the Lord, 'Why have you dealt ill with your servant, and why have I not found favor in your sight that you lay the burden of all this people on me? Did I conceive all this people? Did I give them birth that you should say to me, "Carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing child to the land that you swore to give to their fathers"? Where am I to get meat to give to all this people? For they weep before me and say, "Give us meat that we may eat." I am not able to carry all this people alone. The burden is too heavy for me. If you will treat me like this, kill me at once if I find favor in your sight, that I may not see my wretchedness." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Gather for me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be the elders of the people and officers over them, and bring them to the tent of meeting, and let them take their stand there with you. And I will come down and talk with you there, and I will take some of the spirit that is on you and put it on them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you may not bear it yourself alone. And say to the people, 'Consecrate yourself, tomorrow you shall eat meat, for you have wept in the hearing of the Lord, saying, "Who will give us meat to eat? For it was better for us in Egypt." Therefore the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. You shall not eat just one day, or 2 days, or 5 days, or 10 days, or 20 days, but a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you, and have wept before him, saying, "Why did we come out of Egypt?" Moses said, "The people among whom I am numbered 600,000 on foot, and you have said, 'I will give them meat that they may eat a whole month.' Shall flocks and herds be slaughtered for them and be enough for them? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them and be enough for them?" And the Lord said to Moses, "Is the Lord's hand shortened? Now you shall see whether my word will come true or not." Now drop down to verse 31. "Then a wind from the Lord sprang up, and it brought quail from the sea and let them fall beside the camp, about a day's journey on this side, a day's journey on the other side around the camp, and about 2 cubits above the ground. The people rose all that day and all that night and all the next day and gathered the quail. And those who gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. And while the meat was yet between their teeth, before it was consumed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord struck down the people with a very great plague. Therefore the name of the place was called Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people who had the craving." Well, it's a serious account, and it's one that a great amount of this word is used, this concept is used, and then the judgment of God upon them. So let's go back to our New Testament passage. The word grumble that is used there is what in Greek is called a present imperative active, right? Imperative means a command. So it is a command, nor grumble, right? So stop this. The present tense means that it is ongoing in its action. So that we have to continually do this, always do this, stop doing it. And the force of it is now, okay? So the idea is to continue, but to stop it now. The Greek word that is used here, gangouzo, is used 8 times in the New Testament. In fact, in the Septuagint account, which is the Greek translation of the Old Testament Hebrew, this is the very word they use in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 1. So if you look it up, for instance, in Thayer's lexicon, it means to murmur, mutter, grumble, say anything in a low tone. So the idea of murmur, at repeating the 2 syllables together, a sort of grumble, as we think a rumble in a crowd, that low sound that can move out in a crowd. You know, probably you've heard it at football fields when a bad call is made or something happens that the greater number of people don't agree with. In our language, it is called an onomatopoeic word. So you have to really work on that. It's a big word. All it means is this, that the essence of the word's meaning is described by the sound of the word. So think of murmur, as I just said. That describes the sound. Other words in our language, the crack of a baseball bat against a ball. Is that the word crack is an onomatopoeic word. Or the creak of a door, as you open a door and you hear that sound. So the sound of the word describes what the word means. So the English word, if you look it up in an American Heritage Dictionary, murmur means to complain in low, mumbling terms, to grumble. Grumble, if you look it up, means to mumble in discontent. A couple of other New Testament passages. This is out of the story of the laborer of the vineyard, where the guy came to the marketplace and hired laborers at different hours of the day and agreed to pay them a denarius a day. And so it didn't matter what time they worked. So one bunch was hired in the beginning of the day, but that last bunch was hired just an hour before quitting time, as we would say. And yet he gave them a denarius. Every one of them got the same amount. And so on receiving it, they grumbled, that's our word, at the master of the house, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat." And remember, the master said, "Is it not mine to dispense as I will?" And so he was making a point to them, "I can do with what I have as I see fit. And why are you grumbling? Is that not what you agreed with me to? That I'd be more generous to these that have come at the last hour of the day." And we get that point about what it means about salvation. Those who have borne the brunt of the heat, those who suffered terrible persecution, could murmur and grumble and complain against people that came, especially if you think of the Jews versus the Gentiles. And then in John the 6th chapter, it's used again there where Jesus said, "Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you cannot have life in yourself." And they said, this is a hard saying. And Jesus, knowing in himself that his disciples were grumbling, that's our word at this, said to them, "Do you take offense at this?" And you remember what happened there. Many turned, it said, of his disciples and walked no more with him. They were so offended in that grumbling action led to that. And so a number of places in the New Testament and the Old Testament where this concept comes out to us. So let's think about Numbers, the 11th chapter, and see what we can learn. First of all, what's the difference between Moses complaining and Israel's complaining? And if you listen very carefully, Moses has a pretty good gripe session there, as we would say, with God. And so why is his different? Moses is doing something that obviously in God's mind is different because he gives aid to Moses. When Moses makes his complaint to God, then God says, "Get 70 elders of Israel, bring them to me, and I will take some of the spirit on you and put on them." Now, the part of the passage we didn't read, they began to prophesy. And there's another whole story there that I didn't want to confuse in the story of the grumbling here. But nonetheless, he gives aid to Moses. But what happened to Israel? The moment they started their, and now Moses, by the way, is not described as grumbling. So I don't want you to think that's what he was doing. But we do see he is complaining about the circumstances he finds himself in and having to bear all these people. But God comes to him in aid. But with Israel, far different reaction. The moment they did it, fire began to burn from the Lord in the edges of the camp, meaning it consumed people. And so you can imagine how fearful they were. And they cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed. So what's the difference? Well, verses 4 through 9 describe to us why God burned among them. And it's because they despised what God had provided. Now, they did have a few other things to eat. I never had thought about this. One time I was teaching this and talked about manna. And the guy said, well, they had herds and flocks. And you know, by the way, if you go back and read, they did. They came out with herds and flocks. That means they had milk. And maybe occasionally they even killed one of them and ate them. So you do know they had a few other things to eat. I had never thought about that until a guy pointed that out in class. But the main thing they had to eat, in fact, the one thing that gave them the sustenance they needed in a place that couldn't have provided for a tenth of their number, was this manna that fell on every day except the Sabbath. Now, I want you to think about something. Eat something daily. Eat it weekly. It's breakfast, lunch, and supper. And you eat it every day of the month. And then you eat it for 12 months, for a year. And then you went through and ate it the same for 40 years. Now, I know some people that eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich every day. I won't say whose name they are, but a peanut butter and jelly sandwich every day. Now, I love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but you don't think about that for a minute. If I ate the same thing every day, day in and day out, I never varied it. Do you think you'd get tired of that? You know, after a while, we kind of say, I'd like to eat something else. And so they were brought to the point that, I mean, they were murmuring. They're not being thankful for what is being done here. Because if we look at why God is doing it, God says, here's why I did it. And they're not thinking about the spiritual reason God was doing this. Why is he leading them through this wilderness? It's a pretty short trek from Egypt to Palestine, but that's not where he took them. And he took them into that, you know, 3-month journey to get to Sinai, and into the Sinai for a year, and he's instructing them. They're building the tabernacle. Maybe the time would have been shorter to get there after that, but they rebelled against him. And so for the next 40 years, they wander in the wilderness. But here's what he says about it. And he humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna when you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Don't you know God in that manna provided every mineral and vitamin and nutrient, protein, carbohydrate, everything they needed was in that manna. It provided every sustenance they needed. Tasted pretty good. In fact, one place it tasted like honey. So I'm naturally drawn to that. Honey and wafer, you know, type of cakes that were baked. I mean, it had a good taste, apparently. But it was every day the same. But God provided for them what they needed. But here's the reason. He made you hunger and fed you what you needed in that time, that he might make you know that's not what is most important in life. It's not important that you get a ribeye steak that's cooked medium and just right, and it's been seasoned just correctly, and the baked potato man is just, I'm going to make all of y'all want to go really fast out of here. And everything is perfect. And then next time we want something else. We want some kind of different savory food. No, he made them suffer and then provided what they needed, but to make them realize that's not who man is. It's not that you just get the kind of food that you need physically. You need to know that man lives by the word that comes from God. That's how man truly lives. There's always a reason why God does what he does. There's a reason for the Lord's Supper. There's a reason that we are to eat something and partake of it. And the tragic and terrible thing is Israel couldn't look beyond their belly. And sometimes we act the same way. We don't think about the things that are most important. The evil of coveting more. Our brother just in his prayer, and by the way, very, very good prayer, Jerry. But in James 1:17, he said this in his prayer, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. In other words, what they could have said about that manna, had they looked at it correctly, is God gave them every perfect gift, every good gift he gave to them. If we believe that, then we'll be content, won't we, with what we have? I mean, we studied a lesson not long ago, and I won't belabor this point here, but learning contentment with what God provides. I have learned in whatever state I'm in, Paul said, if I'm in affliction or if I'm in abundance, I've learned the secret of being content in every circumstance, knowing that I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. So whether I have a little or I have a lot, he knows to be thankful for what God, because God's not going to leave us. God, I will not forsake you. I will not leave you. That doesn't mean you just might have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and that's what you're going to have every day. But he'll take care of us. He'll provide for us, as he has said. And it is evil not to be content with what God has provided. We're not griping really when we do this about what we have. We're griping about who. We're griping about who. We're not thinking about that God has given us exactly what he wanted us to have. So we need to remember that. Grumbling then, if we think about some other verses here, verse 5 and verses 18 through 20, is rejecting the Lord. What were they saying? It was better for us in Egypt. We need to go back to Egypt. Can you imagine they were saying that? When their groaning and crying out had come up to the ears of the Lord because of how we see Pharaoh dealt with them. And the burden they bore, and they were oppressed, as he had told Abraham many centuries before this, that they will be oppressed by that nation, but I will come and judge them. And that's exactly what he did with Moses. And boy, they were just excited and happy, and they're leaving the land of Egypt, and then they no more get into the wilderness. And oh man, I wish we could go back. And remember the fish? The fish was free, and they had melons and leeks and onions and garlic and really bad breath. But I just think about all that food that they longed for, and they attached it with Egypt. Now, how can we do the same thing? Well, because we always say stuff like Hebrews 11:25 warns us against. Choosing rather to be mistreated, he said of Moses, with the people of God, than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. There's our option. Not really an exciting offer, is it? That you enjoy suffering with the people of God, or you enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin? And most people are going to pick happiness here. They're going to pick being everything satisfied here. And we could talk about every sin. We could put everything there. But the bottom line is that we're not thinking about it. It's a myopic view of life. We're not seeing beyond our belly as they were. We're not seeing beyond the fun that sin provides, to really looking at life, and as we talked about this morning, as it really is, in eternity, and focusing on God, our Father, and our future home with Him. One of the things the Scriptures warns us to do in Hebrews, the 10th chapter, is this. I was thinking about what Daniel said to us Wednesday night about the essence of faith in that chapter in James 2, is about we must work. We must produce. Our faith has to be alive. And that's how it's shown. But here is something else we could call the essence of faith. And that is this word endurance. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. I'll tell you what most of life's going to be as a Christian. It's going to be slugging through it. It's going to be slugging through it. It's going to be enduring when it's not pretty, it's not comfortable, it's not easy, when there's problems, when there's difficulties, when there's tribulations, as the Bible says. The way of God is never easy. There's nothing about serving God that's easy. If it were, how many more people would do it? Have we ever read the Apostle Paul's life? Have we ever thought about what he was told he would have to endure to serve God? And then his own words to the saints in that day, in Acts 14:22, he told those new Christians, strengthening the souls of the disciples, encouraging them to continue in the faith, we could say the endurance, and saying that through many tribulations we must enter the kingdom of God. He's thinking the kingdom of God, they're the ultimate heaven. that we will enter only after we have endured many tribulations. We must continue, and that's going to be slugging it out every day, focusing on God. And if we look to this world, if we say, you know, man, it's a lot better here, it's a lot easier here, more fun, then it's just like these people wanting to go back to Egypt. And grumbling because, as verse 4 and 34 say, because God is not enough. These people that had a craving, it says. And then, isn't that interesting? He said, I'm going to give you meat. Now, you won't have it for a day, and you won't have to do it for a week or a month. You're going to eat until it comes out your nostrils. And while they ate with the food in their teeth, between their teeth, God struck them dead. And you kind of wonder about that saying. Why is he so angered when he said he did it? Because he was giving them what they were asking for, but he wasn't pleased with what they were asking for. It's sort of like when finally with our kids, you know, one of the things we realize that maybe how they're going to learn the lesson is, all right, we'll give you what you're asking for. And you give them the thing that they're asking for, knowing that I'm not going to let their soul be destroyed, but I'm going to let them find out. We'll let them discover what that thing does if they go down that road. And God, in effect, was doing the same thing here. We need to rather ask, what are we truly to long for in this life? Are we here to build fancy houses, big vacations, hobnob with whoever we consider the really important people? Let me add it. Are we here to worry about politics and elections and who the next president will be? Is that what our purpose is? Is that what we're really supposed to focus on? The pursuit of happiness, as our Constitution says, and that we just pass over God with a quick nibble or snack on Sunday, and maybe we'll come back for a bit more. Too busy, too tired, too preoccupied. We don't like Zoom, so we just don't join in to Daniel's class on Wednesday night. Why is that? I mean, do we want a lot of God or just enough, we think? Where do we truly find joy? I mean, what is God after in us? Because whatever we're doing here is what's going to echo in eternity. And it is. So why are we doing what we do? What really turns us on in this life? Remember the very first words of this chapter. And the people complained in the hearing of the Lord about their misfortunes, and when the Lord heard it. The Bible warns us in the New Testament, I tell you on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. We need to be very careful what we say about COVID, what we say about the elders, what we say about what's going on with the situation. We need to be very, very careful because God is listening. And He is going to judge us according to what we're saying, according to what our attitude is. And we can do exactly the same thing they did. We need to be very, very cautious about what we do because God is listening. He's listening to our hearts and our attitudes. And so be thankful. Be joyful. Be kind in our responses. Be thankful we have Jim and Calvin. Be thankful that they're making decisions and you're not. And that we can be comfortable with them. I'm not saying that you have to agree with everything. So at the end of the day, the buck stops here, as Harry Truman says. And in matters of judgment, the buck stops Calvin and Jim. And we need to be thankful for that. And so join in the class on Wednesday night. Don't use some kind of excuse for why you don't like it and we're not going to do it. Remember, grumbling, murmuring, God's listening. And be thankful. Be so thankful for what we have, each other, and the joy that we can have in one another. And make the most of it and echo into eternity. If you're subject to heaven's invitation, Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believes not shall be condemned. And if we can help you tonight, if you need to come to him, while together we stand and sing.